This is Head Speaks, a proud member of the Headcast Network family of shows. As usual, I am your host, Aaron Moss, a.k.a. Brother Head. And this is my, well, mostly monthly Headcast, where I talk about comics, movies, role-playing games, TV shows, and anything else geeky that I want. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I manage to con a guest onto the show. So if you like comic books like Firestorm and the Atom, or movies like Back to the Future, or even the Star Wars sequels, or anything else geeky, this is the place for you. So let's get the flux capacitor fluxing, the TARDIS tarting, and let's say Shazam! On with this episode of Head Speaks.
To right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
And welcome to Head Speaks. This is the first episode after the great Headcast Network crash of 2022. Shortly after release the last episode, my hard drive, recorded on a laptop, and my portable hard drive fell on the floor, and it took me a while to try to retrieve things. I lost some documents. I lost some files. I was able to get most of it back, but unfortunately, not everything was recoverable. So I've been slowly piecing things back together, and, well, I'm back. So this month, I've only got one thing up for bat, I believe. So let's go ahead and get started.
Faster than a speeding bullet.
In the Great Hall of the Justice League.
Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
The Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is...
What's in Head Long Box?
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind. The world's greatest super friends.
So this month we're looking at Power of the Atom, issue number 4. I'm going to do this a little bit differently this time. I was over on Facebook, and I was talking with a guy named Nick Lindsay, and he'd listened to the previous episode, and he had some constructive feedback for me, and he made a comment that I seemed to do my synopsis of the episode, or the episode, the issue, and then I kind of go over everything again when I review it. So I'm going to try this time. I'm going to give you the creator credits like I normally do. And then instead of doing a synopsis, I will just go straight into my thoughts on the book, and I will probably cover the synopsis while I'm doing that. So let's give this a try and see what you think. I don't get a lot of feedback, so I do the best I can, but let me know what you guys think. Do you like it better this way or the way I normally do it? So let's go and get started with Power of the Atom 4. This was cover dated November of 1988. The on-sale date was July the 26th, 1988. This came out 1 month after I graduated high school. Well, a month and some change. The cover price was $1. This issue had two stories. The main story plus what's called a DC bonus book, which we'll get to in a little bit. The main story, the title is What Are You Doing for the Rest of Your Life? Written by the fabulous Roger Stern. Penciled by Dwayne Turner. Inker was Keith Stan Wilson, letterer Bill Oakley, colorer Nancy Houlihan, and the cover was done by Dwayne Turner and Keith Stan Wilson, and the editor of this was the Superman guy, Mike Carlin. So as usual, start with the cover of this book. We got our Power of the Atom logo on the right, the left-hand side, there's the DC logo, and it says bonus book, a free 16-page second feature, and then the main focus of the cover, we have Hawkman directly followed by Hawkwoman, and in front of them we have the Atom. I was going to say the Power of the Atom. We have the Atom, and it's like he's using his powers because he's got the nuclear symbol around him. A great cover. I love this. We get a full head-on shot of all three characters. Back in the day, back when the Atom first started and had his first book, he actually teamed up with Hawkman in that book. It was a Hawkman and the Atom book for a while. So I really like the fact that they brought Hawkman back into this title. It's the fourth issue of his new series. And Hawkman has returned with his wife, Hawkgirl, or Hawkwoman. Yeah, Hawkwoman at this point. Let's go and move on to the story itself. So we start out with the Atom jumping off a cliff as the Atom. And I like this splash page. We get the title, What Are You Doing for the Rest of Your Life, embedded in some rock. There's a waterfall behind the Atom. And we get some dialogue here talking about how Ray Palmer's warned about Potter's Gorge when he was 5. Kids had lost their life there. They tried diving into the pool. And it was full of rocks or too shallow, so a lot of kids died because of it. And it says he always explored the pool, but he never actually tried diving into it until today. Because, again, he's the Atom. He can shrink down. He can lower his density. So this is a great opening scene here of showing the Atom jumping off the rocks, off the cliff, the waterfall behind him. And then he shrinks down as he goes into the pool. And I love this here on page 2 as we see the Atom shrinking down as he hits the water. So to him, when he shrinks down, I mean, he'd leap into a thimble of water and it'd be like a pool to him. So again, Atom is one of my favorite characters, and it's part of the reason why. Not only super intelligent, but just his powers and the way he uses them are fantastic, in my opinion. And he comes up out of the water like this. As he comes up, he sees a giant bird above him. And his first thought is, again, for the last, I don't know how long, he's been, you know, stuck at 6 inches high until recently, living with the little people. So he sees this hawk, and he thinks it's a skull bird at first. So he dives under the water. And he's like, wait a minute, they're all wiped out. They can't be a skull bird. So he jumps up and he tries to tame the bird. So he jumps on the bird's head or back and grabs its wings. And he tries to ride it like they used to when he lived out with, you know, Leowathan and the rest of the people. And as he pulls one of the wings come off. And what the heck? As he falls into Hawk Woman's hands. And this is page 4. We get Shira, which is Hawk Woman, holding the Atom. And he's holding on to Hawkman's wings that are on his helmet. And then we get Hawkman in the background. Hey, Ray, what's the big idea? And Ray's like, oh, I didn't realize that was you guys. I love this, him seeing his friends again after so long. My only problem with it is I don't know, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know if Hawkman flying in the air would look that much like a bird. I mean, yes, he does have the wings and he does have the bird motif, but I would think that, especially Ray leaping up past him to land on his head, I don't know. In my opinion, he shouldn't have missed that it was a human instead of a bird. He should have seen the human as he flew by. Again, it's a nice little, you know, funny gag. I just don't know how well it would have actually played out if it, in quotes, really happened. But I do love Hawkman and Hawkwoman teaming up with Atom. So I can give that a pass. And I like this as Ray's growing back to full size. Hawkwoman says that they were looking for him. And Hawkman's like, a strange way to greet old friends, Atom. And Hawkwoman's like, oh, hush, Carter. He's embarrassed enough as it is. Because, again, if you don't know, Hawkman and Hawkwoman are a married couple. And again, I love the dialogue in here. It really reflects that of a married couple. You know, he's trying to give the Atom grief for ripping off the wings on his helmet. And Shira was like, can't you see he's embarrassed enough? Just knock it off. Leave him alone. Great writing on this. I think Roger Stern did a fantastic job writing this series. And so Atom apologizes, says, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to rip their wings. I thought you were something else. Well, never mind what I thought. And he gives the wings back. And he's like, oh, that's all right, Ray. I don't know why I still wear the things anyways. They were an honor from people who've become less than honorable. But that's hardly your concern. So Hawkman asks him what happened. I thought you were gone. So he kind of recaps what happens in the Sword of the Atom miniseries in the last 3 issues that he tried to start over in the Amazon with a bunch of lost alien penal colony that were stuck at the same height he was. He found Princess Lothan and fell in love. And he talks about how he took part in battles he hasn't seen since the days of the Justice League. And he's on his way to becoming a barbarian warlord. And again, we talked about all this the last few issues of my podcast, where his village was destroyed. He chopped through the phone line, met up with Norman Brawler, got stuck 3 foot high, and so forth. Took out Strobe last issue, and was the CIA asked him to join up with them, and he said, I'll have to think about it. And so he came back to his old boyhood haunts to kind of sort things out and get himself figured out. He wants to figure out what he's doing, what he's going to do with his future, where he should go from here. Because, again, the paparazzi's bugging him all the time. The CIA has offered to help him, but he knows it comes with a price. And, again, Hawkman's like, so you're actually considering the CIA offer? He's like, sure. So my most satisfying cases are the ones I took with them. And, again, he said the biggest reservation is a new identity. It would simplify things, but he's not sure if he wants to stop being Ray Palmer. Because, well, he's been Ray Palmer longer than he's been the Atom. That's who he is. So, and I do love that... Ray is talking with his friends Carter Hall and Shira about this, as they have worked for the CIA, if I'm not mistaken, and they've also their identity, their identity is known to the public at large, so they deal with everyone knowing who they are all the time. So he's got kind of that perspective to look for. And again, so while Adam's talking, he says the whole country's changed. He talks about the Gordon Gottfried's anti-hero riots, which was over in the Legends miniseries, which I talked about so long ago over my Task Force X podcast, because that's where Suicide Squad started at, the revitalized modern Suicide Squad. The modern Suicide Squad for the 80s, I guess, started during the Legends. So I talked about that. So go look at those episodes if you want to hear more about Legends. And then Hawkman talks about how he's become embarrassed by Thangar and by being a Thargarian. And Hawkman mentions that there was a war, but it's not Adam's concern. Again, he's referring to the Shadow War of the Hawkman, I believe it was called. It was a 4-issue miniseries back in the mid-80s, focusing on Hawkman and his whole dealings with Thangar. A good series. I definitely recommend checking that out. And again, Adam, being a good friend, tells him, you know, one of my friends, of course, it concerns me if it concerns you. And like this, he tells Hawkman and Hawkwoman that, you know, maybe they should all consider starting over new identities. And Hawkwoman's Shira, she's like, no, just a moment. I happen to like who I am, thank you. He's like, I only meant, I know, Ray, but no one should make a major decision, you know, quickly like that. We've taken a break from our careers. You know, why don't you come spend some vacation time with us? And then other than the Atom jumping off the rocks and ripping off Carter's wings on his headdress, so far this first 8 pages has been mainly a lot of talking, which a lot of people complain about when you get a lot of dialogue like in a movie or TV show or even a comic. I personally kind of like it. It, especially the way that Roger Stern's writing the dialogue in this book. It's really getting to the heart of the matter, and we're getting some feelings from both the Hawk people and from Ray Palmer. So I do like the way this is going. And as they're talking, as they're flying back to New Orleans where the Hawks live, they're talking about marriage and how Hawkman and Hawk would have been married for a while. And Ray was saying that, you know, maybe that's part of the problem with Gene, that there wasn't enough laughing in their marriage. And Hawkman's like, well, speaking as one who's been falsely accused of being humorless, and Shira's like, humorless? You? Just because you make Michael Dukakis look like Bob Goldthwait? And for the younger crowd out there, Michael Dukakis was a politician back in the mid-80s, late 80s, and Bob Goldthwait is Bobcat Goldthwait, who is a comedian slash actor. To me, he's most famously known for being in the Police Academy movies. Along with other things. I like Bobcat Goldthwait. I think he's pretty funny. But I do like the reference here to Bobcat Goldthwait. Because, again, Michael Dukakis was a very serious politician. And Hawkman is usually portrayed as a very serious character. If I'm not mistaken, he's very right-wing, very, very hardcore, usually. So I do like that comparison there. And Hawkman's like, no one appreciates quiet wit anymore. And Shira's like, if your wit was any more quiet, be mute. So, yeah, I love the banter between the husband and wife. I think that Roger Stern did a great job with the dialogue between the two and with Adam. But I love the dialogue between this old married couple. It's just great dialogue. And so they land in their apartment. Again, their apartment, they've got a skylight so they can get in and out of their home easily. But as they come in here on the bottom of page 10, they see that they've been vandalized and robbed. Shira says they've been robbed, and Hawkman says they've been ransacked. And one thing I was going to mention, I do like the looks of Hawkman's helmet here because without the ears on there. I mean, I do like the wings because it's very classic Hawkman. But if I'm not mistaken, the Golden Age Hawkman didn't have wings on his helmet. So this is kind of what he's looking like right now, which, again, the Hawkman have a convoluted history. I think maybe the only character that's got a worse history than the Hawkman at this point is Donna Troy, Wonder Girl, or from the Titans. In fact, I believe shortly after this, Tim Truman, I believe it was, does the Hawk World series, which kind of rewrites the Hawk's origins and the reason they came to Earth. And it kind of not rewrites, it retells that story. And it sets it a modern day. So they got kind of a glitch because they've got the Hawkman floating around here right now. But later on, they're going to bring another Hawkman with the same name from Thangar over. And so they have to deal with that whole mess, which we'll probably, I think we'll talk about that here in a couple issues. But that's for the future. So we find out that apparently a trunk was stolen that had some of their Earth weapons, plus they had a couple of their spare anti-gravity belts in there. And that's how they flew at this time, was using anti-gravity belts. I believe it may have the nth metal in, or maybe the nth metal comes later. I forget now. Again, my timeline on the Hawks are getting a little messed up in my head. But Hawkman asks Ray if he wants to help him track down his equipment. Of course, Ray's like, need you ask? Let's go. And here on page 12, we have the Hawks and Adam finding where the thieves are at. And again, Adam's watching from above and he's like, your basic Southern fried thugs relax after a hard day's theft. This is almost too easy. So he gets on the lower radio. He's like, little guy to Papa Bird, you're on the money. The trunk is in the coop full of pigeons. Do you copy Papa Bird? And Hawkman's like, quit screwing around, Adam. You really don't have a sense of humor, do you? So I love the jokes in here and the callbacks to the earlier conversation. And then we get a little message here that the story is, I'm sorry, back up a second. The Hawks bust in the window and we get people, huh? Look out, it's Hawkman. And then we get a continued after bonus book. And at this point, we get our little bonus story. This is bonus book number 8, which we'll talk about after we get done with this issue. We'll come back to this. So, continuing on with the story, like I say, it's a 14-page story plus some information on the artist. And I don't like the... I love the bonus books. I think it was interesting. I don't like where the bonus book is placed in this one because it kind of... It's in the middle of the book, of course, because it has to be because of the staples and all that. But right where it's at, it kind of interrupts the flow of the story because we have Hawkman and Hawkwoman busting in and the crook saying, look out, it's Hawkman. And then you've got the bonus book, which stops the story because then you come back with Hawkwoman saying, well, I like that. Why does anyone ever say, look out, it's Hawkwoman? You think this is a solo act instead of a partnership? And Hawkman's like, oh, now you've done it. You've upset my wife. I almost feel sorry for you now. Almost. So that joke there is kind of interrupted with that bonus book. So I don't know if it'd been better to wait for the bonus book for another issue, or I'm not quite sure how they could have done that. Maybe move the story around a little bit so the bonus book isn't interrupting the flow of this entrance of the Hawks here. I think it might have gone a little better. Because again, reading this, you're reading the story, you get the Hawks busting, and then you got to stop for a 14-page story, either read or come back to later. And then you finish up with the quip, which kind of throws off the timing. And as I say, timing is everything. So, but Hawkman is busy, you know, questioning these guys as they're beating up. He's like, who's in charge here? Talk fast or I'll turn you over to her. As Hawkwoman's over there knocking out some of his buddies, knocking crates around. And the guy from behind is watching with a knife in his hand, getting ready to throw. He's like, Lewis is hanging like a rag doll. Let's see how tough this Hawkman acts with 8 inches of steel between his ribs. Very cliche writing. Not writing, but speaking for the bad guy. But again, this was the late 80s. What do you want? That's the way we spoke, you know. But as he gets ready to throw the knife, Ray shrinks down from nothing to his normal height. He's like, I believe hunting Hawkman with a knife is prohibited in this state. You know, what? And someone else comes running up behind Ray, and Ray's able to twist the guy that he grabbed and throws him into the second guy. He's like, hey, thanks for the warning. Helped me more than your friend, but thanks anyways. Again, I love the dialogue as they're fighting here. Then the Hawks find their belts, well, again, their belts in quotes, as they realize that it's belts, but it's not theirs. And suddenly we hear a voice come from nowhere. Good, Hawkwoman. Very good. I thought you'd be the first to notice the switch. Of course, they weren't meant to fool you for long. And we find out that gravity's being affected and they're being weighed down. And all of a sudden, IQ comes in. I Quimbley or something like that. I forget his last name now, but he's a villain that's super smart, that showed up and fought the Justice League quite a bit. And apparently fought the Titans, because there's a reference here that he was in jail, that the Titans caught him. And it gives another, and I love these. I mentioned it before. I'll mention it again. I love when they give you a reference to a issue that they're referring to. So this was New Teen Titans number 40, is when the Titans captured IQ. And he's like, they did. But you know me, once I put my mind to it, there's not much I can't do. Escape was child play. And he talks about how he inspected their belts and was able to reverse the effects of the field that gives out that allows them to break gravity and fly. He was able to reverse it to make them heavier than they should be. As Shira throws her bolo or whatever it is, it goes through IQ, and we realize that it's a hologram of him, or maybe not a hologram per se, but I guess it is a hologram. And the Atom is not hiding, but he's when he felt the gravity ray go into effect, he shrunk down behind Hawkman's body, and apparently IQ hasn't seen the Atom yet, so he doesn't know the Atom's there, so he's able to use that to his advantage. And again, being able to control his own mass and density, making him heavier than he should be, well, it doesn't really affect Ray because, again, he can use his belt and, or well, not belt anymore, but his costume and make himself lighter to make himself be able to move. And he finds the projector on the floor, which, again, he uses his powers and shrinks down into and rides the photon stream through the optic cable right in IQ's lair. Where, again, he goes to punch him, but he jumps out. He's like, smile for the camera. What on earth? He's like, you must recognize me as much as I've been in the news lately. And he goes to punch him, but again, IQ, not knowing someone's going to come to stop him, has a personal force field around him, which stops Ray from hitting him. And again, IQ goes to blast the Atom, but the Atom uses powers, of course. He shrinks down. And IQ hits a power supply, causing an explosion in the panel there. And again, I love this here on page 17. We get, I've said this before and I'll say it again. We got the Atom here growing from microscopic to full size as he punches IQ. And then the panel below that, we get the Ray Palmer shrinking down to almost nothing to avoid the force field or the blast. And he's like, that blast must have cut right through him. It's like my primary power supply, as if he weren't there. Damn, he must have shrunk under the blast. But where is he? And all of a sudden, Ray's right behind him full size again. I'll give you two guesses. And again, since he knows that IQ has a force field, he's able to use more power. So he uses his white dwarf star, and he makes himself super strong, basically, and just socks IQ. And while it doesn't really hurt him per se, it knocks him through the wall and almost overloaded his force field. And I like this. IQ's laying on the other side of the wall. He's like, he knocked me right through the wall and nearly overloaded my force field. I didn't think he had that, or I didn't know he had that kind of power. I don't dare face him again. Fortunately, I don't have to. As he made the equipment or the lab, whatever, explode, allowing him to get out. Apparently, he had incendiary charges planted. And again, he had to destroy his equipment, but Like he says, better self-destruction for it than incarceration for him. And again, he used up all the force field's power cells, is exhausted. So as he tries to get away, he trips on Bolo's. He's like, my nose, you broke my nose. And then he looks up and sees who stopped him. He's like, you? Who else? Your hologram showed only a little of your encounter with the Atom. Let me guess, he shrunk and tricked you into smashing some of your electronics, right? And that knocked out the power to both the hologram projector and the gravity field. So it kind of explains how they got free and they were able to find their way over to where IQ's at. And again, they've got him and Hawkman's got his mace and he's like, now that we have you, you're going to tell us what you know. And he's like, talk, where's the Atom? And Hawkman's getting upset because he doesn't know where, him and the Atom are really good friends and there's an explosion, so he's not quite sure if Ray is still alive or where Ray's at. And IQ is like, your friend interfered with my operation. There was an explosion. There's no way he could have. And Ray pops up at that time full size, and he's like, he doesn't know me very well, does he? And IQ is like, oh, no. And he's like, he explains that when he saw something nasty was going to happen, he shrunk down through the floor. He got out of there right before IQ's lab blew up. And Ray tells the Hawks that IQ blew up the lab with the remote control unit on his watch. And yeah, his name's Ira Quimby is what it was. IQ. That's what his name, Ira Quimby. I thought it was Quimby or something like that. But he mentions, he's like, you're going to be the guest for the state for a long time, Quimby. Which reminded me that his name's Ira Quimby. Or, again, he's got the initials IQ. So, of course, he's going to become a supervillain. That's what they all do. And then we get a couple panels of the mysterious gentleman. Again, to me at the time, he was mysterious. I wasn't quite sure this was because I didn't read a lot of the Adam's earlier adventures in his own solo book. So I wasn't quite sure this was at this point, if I remember right. I know who he is now. And I'm not saying nothing because I don't know if it's supposed to be a surprise or not. So this gentleman, he's saying how he's much smarter than IQ. IQ's an idiot. He lets his passion for revenge cloud his judgment. But he's like, revenge is a dish best served cold. Let it heat up, and it'll get the better of you. It took me years to see that. So again, he's letting us know that he's fought the Atom before, and again, who his identity will become known soon if we don't know who he is. And I'm not going to mention who he is yet. I know at this point, because again, I've read this many times, but we'll hold off on this. And then the story ends with Ray coming to a decision that he's not going to get a new identity. He's going to try to work it out as Ray Palmer because, again, that's who he is. And he's like, if you guys can do it, I give it a try. And the issue ends with Ray talking them into finding some Cajun cooking with Carter picking up the tab. And Carter's like, I know when I'm licked. Lead on. And then we get a next issue box, close encounters with the CIA, the JLI, and the ever-elastic elongated man. Plus more about the mysterious man from Sam Clente. Be here for comings and goings. Sorry. So the book talks like this is supposed to be a mystery man also. So I'm glad I'm holding off on revealing who it is. Again, if you've read this book, you probably already know. But let's hold off for another couple issues and we'll figure out who this is together. And so the letter column, they've got one finally. 4 issues in, and they've got letters on the Power of the Atom number 1. I like the letter column. The title is called Small Talk, and the Small Talk, and it's got the Atom bouncing along the top of it. It's great, great logo for the letter column. And again, in the letter column, the first letter they published was from T.M. Maple, who was an infamous letter hack at the time. He was a Canadian. I remember seeing Tim Maple in a lot of different books at the time. And he was talking about how, he's the barbaric Atom is gone. We're now got this new Atom and he's enjoying it. And he's talking about the letter column, in fact. And he said that he submitted this for the Captain Atom way back when, but they never used it. So his suggestion is to use Up an Atom. And then he also had some others ideas. Eve of the Atom, Look Atom Letters, Atomizing Letters, Atom Bombettes, Attack of the Giant Orange Fungus People. And he's like, how about back to the drawing board? So again, then they mentioned how, T.M. Maple is again, infamous letter hack of the time, and how they were glad to have him in, you know, the first letter in their first letter column. And there's a couple of other letters just praising the Atom and the first issue. And again, like I've talked about a couple of months ago, well, a couple episodes ago, more than a couple of months ago, but anyways, a couple episodes ago, how I loved it. And again, the Atom's one of my favorite characters. I love this series. So definitely great. And then here at the end of it, they've got a preview of the next issue. We have Will Maxwell Lord is in a small little bubble, and we get Elongated Man answering the phone with Ray popping out of it. And Elongated Man's neck is stretched like a phone cord. Just a great, great cover, which we'll talk more about next month. But that is this issue of Power of the Atom. Again, overall, I'm really enjoying the series. Big fan of the Atom, so I really love this series and what they're doing with them. Roger Stern did a great job on this issue and this book altogether. So, again, only lasted 18 issues, which I was saddened by. I want it to last longer, but again, we'll talk about that in the future. So now that we've talked about the main story, let's cut into the bonus book. This was bonus book number 8. A little information about that real quick. The title of the story was called Skullduggery. As I said, it was a 14-page story. This was bonus book number 8. It was a program designed to showcase the work of promising newcomers. The writer of this was Joe Chalchi. He also did the bonus book number 1, which was over in Action Comics Weekly, which was his first work, it looks like. The penciler was Jim Ballante. He did 3 other comics before this issue, and Jim went on to become rather well-known for his Catwoman comic that he wrote or drew, and what was known as her balloon bosom. Because, again, he drew Catwoman with incredibly large chest, and that's what he was known for, I think. That's what I know him best as. The inker was Dan Schaefer. This was the only DC work he did, it looks like. He did some work for Comico, Marvel, and a couple of other titles for some other companies. The letter was Helen Vesick. She was a working letter. She's been doing a lot of books before this, so she wasn't new. And the colorist was a Matt Webb. This was his first work. He went on to do a lot of books for DC. He did some D&D books, and he also worked on John Byrne's Next Men. So those were the creators for this book, for this bonus book. So let's go and take a look at it. So the in quotes, cover would be the cover of the book. We show Hawkman standing over one of the writers he used to fight. Behind him, we get some Mayan temples or some Inca temples, whatever they are, with a skull rider behind him in the air. The Atom's got a sword in his hand. I don't know. It's not a bad cover. Ray looks a little off. The costume's a little darker than what I think it should be. It's not bad. And again, this is Jim Ballant, which became a famous DC artist over the next few years. So I don't want to say too much bad about it, but something about it looks just a little off to me. Something with the way Ray's face looks on here. I can't quite place what I'm trying to look back a couple issues and or a couple pages in the main story, and I can't quite make out what it is. I know if I had someone like Jared or Brad, a couple guys from my G.I. Joe show, I'm sure they could point out what I'm picking up here that I can't quite tell. But I don't know. But anyways, we go to the story itself, and we get this guy smashing through Norman Brower's window. Palmer, I've come to bring to your knees. I challenge you to face me as the Atom. And this time, Gene Loring will see you as you truly are. And Norman Brower, the guy that's living in Ray's house, is falling to the ground. He's like, hey, you got the wrong guy. And this writer guy picks him up. What? You're not Ray Palmer. It doesn't matter. I want to know where he is. Where's Gene and Palmer? Tell me before I crush you. And Norman's like, I'm Norman Brower. I'm the writer. I wrote the book about the Atom's farewell. I'm just renting the place. I don't know where they're at. They're divorced. And again, there's reference here to the Sword of the Atom special, which we talked about quite a while ago here on this very show. And the guy throws Norman down. He's like, divorced? I knew he couldn't hold her. She saw through him like I did years ago. But you're lying. Tell me where they are. And so he starts looking through some of Norman's stuff, and he finds the address of Altamalter. I mispronounce it. I know I am. And again, so we know, even though this guy looks like one of the Skull Riders that the Atom used to fight when he was, you know, stuck at 6 inches high in the Amazon, we know this guy isn't, because 1A, he's referring to Jean and Ray as if they're still married. And when he went to live with them, him and Jean were already separated, divorced. He was with Princess Leithan. So there's something very strange going on with this guy. And he talks about how he saw through Ray years ago. And then he mentions their old Altamalter these days. So, and again, we can tell this is kind of an act. He's like, you know, when he sees me, he'll think he's having a nightmare. So he flies off to fight Ray. And next thing we know, we see a Skull Rider and a I don't know what it's called, a rope with spikes on the end of it, wraps around and knocks him off. And once he's down, Ray pulls his sword and we see him. Well, we don't see him, but the guy's on the ground and Ray pets the sword to his neck. And then we cut to Ray's face. He's like, I warned you, you. You see, swaff, chalk. And we can tell that he killed the guy. Because next panel now, we see Ray crying out, Wathan! And we see the guy lay on the ground dead. And Ray's waking up from a nightmare. And he talks about how he's been having these nightmares. He's having more often. And he's trying to figure out, you know, because again, is he a scientist? Is he a sword-wielding barbarian? He's not quite sure where he fits into the world at this point. Because again, normally he used to be a scientist, a superhero. And then for a while, he lived out in the jungles and became a barbarian, a Conan type character for a while. So he's trying to figure out where he's at. And that world's gone. So he's back to being a scientist, superhero. So again, he's just trying to figure out, kind of like an identity crisis. And he talks about how he's had reoccurring dreams, some of those experienced by post-war servicemen in civilian life. And as he gets to his house, he talks and finds out that someone attacked Norman. And he goes into the house, the phone rings, and it's the guy that attacked Norman. He's like, Palmer, I know you're there. What happened to your friend is a sample of what I'll do to you. Are you mad enough to face me, Palmer? Palmer? And Ray shrinks down to, again, microscopic or telescopic. Telescopic? That's not right. Microscopic size. Jumps into the phone and peers at a phone booth that's empty. The guy took off already. And so he calls Jean to let her know that apparently someone's after him and to watch out. And he finds out she's in a conference call. He hangs up quickly because he's in a hurry. And the gal's like, Matthew's call. The jerk hung up. And then we cut over to a bar and hotel where we see this guy coming onto this woman. He's offering to take up to his place for a drink. They go in and he's, you know, reaching for bottles on the shelf. And she's commenting how, you know, it must be nice to be tall, to be able to take whatever you want. And all of a sudden we see the guy he's kind of shaking and he's saying, oh no, it's wearing off. And the girl, she's drunk. She's like, what's the matter? Hey, are you getting shorter or something? If I didn't know better, I'd swear you're becoming a shrimp. And here at the bottom of page 5, just the look on this guy's face of pure anger at this woman calling him a shrimp. And again, he apparently so angry that the next page at the top, we see him getting dressed and we see her arm with blood. It's black blood because, again, it's a code-approved comic, so they got to watch the coloring on blood and all that. But anyways, her arm's hanging with the blood on it so we can tell he killed her. And again, he's like, the last laugh was on you, sweetheart. Checkout time. A very, I don't know, 80s serial killer corny phrase there. But, you know, again, I'll allow it. It's the 80s. It's what we got at the time. So, and then we get the same guy going to a Lab Tech Research Inc. And he talks to some guy named Ferris. You know, he's like, why did I shrink? Now, why do I go back down to this height? And the scientist tells him, I've told you, Cal, there's no way to raise your height permanently. We reach this optimum safe dosage, you know, you're becoming immune to the treatment. And Cal is like, you're trying to hustle me. I want a megadose right now, one that'll stick. And he's like, the scientist is like, such a dose could kill you. Do you know what it does in organic matter? It implodes it. And he's like, we just don't have the technology. That only someone like Ray has ever been able to make it work. And so Cal shoots the scientist. He's like, I understand every blasted word. And so he straps himself in and he sets the system that gives him, makes him taller to maximum outputs. And he, as he's doing this, we get kind of a flashback to his origin. Apparently he knew Gene and Ray in school. And I guess he dated Gene for a while. And apparently she broke up with him. And he thinks it was because he's too short. And Gene's like, there's no love in you, Cal. Only ambition. You can't love me or anyone else. And apparently Ray comes over to defend Gene. And he's like, you stay away from Gene Thornton or I swear all. And again, he punched him because Cal's laying on the ground with a bloody lip. He's like, the Thorntons own this town. And we get everything we want. And then we cut to Cal doing experiments. And he's making a bird grow larger. And we get a message on the screen here saying maximum output, meltdown sequence initiated. And then we cut over to One Thornton Tower, where we get Cal busting in on this guy in bed with a woman. And the guy in bed says, what's the idea, Chandler? And we find out it's actually Cal. Apparently Chandler was Cal's big brother. And I guess his dad always gave Cal grief about being small. He's like, nope, not Chandler, Pop. Not my big brother. Just me, little Cal, the runt of litter. You know, the one you had committed to that mental hospital. I guess I do look like Chandler now. You know, the co-ed's death was an accident, but you put me away anyways. So we find out that apparently he killed some co-ed and his dad pulled strings. And instead of Cal being in the electric chair for murdering somebody, he got locked up in a sane asylum, which he probably needs because he seems like a little Cocoa Puffs.
That's Cocoa Puffs! Yeah! Go for Cocoa Puffs! Go for Cocoa Puffs!
And just to prove the point, Cal murders his dad and the woman he's with, girlfriend, wife, mistress, whoever she is, she's not really important enough to the story to get a name or anything. All we know is that when she first breaks in, she's like, oh, Cordwainer, you're so powerful. He's like, it comes with the territory, sweetheart. And that's when Cal busts in. So I'm assuming it's either a mistress or girlfriend or hooker. I don't know. But anyways, they both wind up dead. And Cal's like, always want to remember you this way. And then we cut to Ivy University. And this story must take place right before the happenings of this actual issue. Because apparently Ray's teaching as the name of Mr. Jones. And one of the students stands up. He's like, yes, Mr. Jones, I have a question. Or can I call you Mr. Palmer? And again, they start asking questions about, you know, the experience of being at 6 inches high. And Ray's like, well, we're not here to discuss my career as the Atom. Let's stick to the syllabus. So this kind of leads into the actual issue where he's thinking about giving up being Ray Palmer because of things like this. And they're back with the Skull Rider from earlier in the story, who we now know as Cal with grease paint, disguising himself as one of the Skull Riders as he attacks the Atom in his lab. The Atom Ray Palmer leaps up at the Skull Rider or Cal. And we find out that now Cal can adjust his height and weight and apparently the birds that he's on and Ray's as he shrinks them down. As they go flying into a simutank is what he calls it. And so they do a little fighting here for a couple pages. They land into a pool where there's a piranha, which Ray's able to defeat. And then Ray finds out that his nemesis is actually Cal Thornton, all around psycho. He's like, nice you remembered. You also remember that I was captain of the archery team? Letter to football, track, wrestling, the debate team. Oh, and fencing. So he gave Ray a sword, and he wants to fight Ray over for Gene's hand. Again, because he's still very caught up on the fact that Gene dumped him. And if he's talking, he's like, it's a pity Gene can't see me finish you off. So as they start fighting, and Ray's not wanting to fight him because, again, Ray spent a while in a barbarian world, and that's what he's been dreaming about. So he doesn't want to kill this guy, so he's afraid to pick up the sword. And finally, Ray's had enough, and he picks up the sword, and they start fighting, and he's able to, he breaks the guy's arm and knocks him against the tree. And the guy's like, the force of that blow broke my arm. You can't kill me, Palmer. You're one of the good guys. You're the Atom, Palmer. Palmer. And Ray's almost lost to like a blood rage because, again, he's gone back to that barbarian mental state for a moment. And he's about ready to run this guy through with the sword. And all of a sudden, he sticks in the sword right next to him. He's like, I could have killed you just now. No jury would convict me. That's the difference between us. Even after the time, my time among the barbarians, I'm still a civilized man. And back in real time in the classroom, or real size, whatever, the police are there and the reporter, and they're like, so you're saying the Atom and the Gold Man vanished? Yes, no, I don't know. And all of a sudden, Ray materializes back to 6 foot high with Cal. He's telling me, can you arrest this guy? And the cop's like, what charges? Let him tell you, all the way down to the station house. And by the way, keep an eye out peeled for his pet, a 4-inch hawk with a bad temper. I'll deal with that later. Right now, I'm going to the hospital to visit a sick friend. And the cop's like, you okay? Ray's like, me? I feel like a new man. So again, the artwork in this wasn't bad. It's not Jim Ballant that I know from Catwoman. He's still fine-tuning his art, I guess, his craft. It wasn't horrible. I've seen worse artwork, but this isn't what we've been getting in this comic. So, and again, since this is in this book, it's hard to not compare it to Dwayne Turner and, who is it, Keith Stan Wilson. Like I say, it's not bad, but I'm glad that this isn't the regular art. Some of the pages look fine. Like again, here when Ray's talking to the cop here on page 14 of the story, his face again looks, I don't know, just, it looks kind of amateurish. I think that's what it is. It looks like someone that's still learning how to draw drew it. Again, better than I could do, but not quite what we're used to. So I think that's part of the problem is that Jim is starting out relatively and the artwork's not quite fine-tuned yet. So, but overall, it was a good story. I thought that the writer, Joe Calici, I believe his name is, did a good job with the story. The artwork, like I said, while it wasn't what I wanted, it's not bad. And then the final page of this tells what's a DC bonus book, where it says every month to further notice, we're going to add an extra 16 pages of an ongoing DC title and fill in the work of promising newcomers. You get a free story? We get a chance to work with people we will fill will become important creators in a few years. And there's some little bios of the creators. There's one for Joe Calici, who was transplanted a New Yorker, now lives in Baton Beach, Florida. He went to New York City Community College and the South Florida Art Institute, did a number of jobs, including amusement park operator, ride operator, and a tour guide and photographer. And they talk about Jim Ballante, who is a New Jerseyite, who was born in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. He went to the Joe Kubert School of Cartoon and Graphic Art. It says he's done quite a bit of work previously in the comics field. He was a background inker for Kim DeMolder and Joe Schneidert. He's done anything from the Fantastic Four to the She-Hulk. And then they have a little bit on the inker Dan Schaaf, who was a resident of Oregon, educated at Clackamas Community College and Portland State. So these bonus books were a good way to bring in some new talent and see some new people doing work for some of these characters that we've seen for years. And like I said, the artist did a really good job, in my opinion. Jim, not quite as good as he will soon become. So, anyways, that is the DC bonus book. That is the Atom number 4. And I think that's going to do it for me today. We've been at this almost an hour, so I'm going to go and call it a day here. I'd appreciate if you guys let me know what you think. Did you like it better the way I did here without the synopsis and just covering it through the story like I've been doing? Or I did? Or, I don't know. Let me know. And if you're listening to this, Nick, let me know. Was this better than what the last episode you listened to? I'd love to hear from you again. But that's going to do it. Next month, we'll be looking at issue 5 of The Power of the Atom. Plus, we'll see what else I get into. I'm not quite sure yet where I'm going. We'll call it a day here. And remember, everybody, Head has spoken. Thank you. thank you for listening to another fantastic episode of Head Speaks. Hope you enjoyed it. If so, let me know. Drop me an email to head@headspeaks.com or visit our home at head.headspeaks.com. You can also visit and talk with me on Facebook and Google+, both under Head Speaks. You can also send an MP3 file with your thoughts, and I can play that on the air. And you can also get more of me on my other podcasts. Be sure to listen to Task Force X, where monthly I look at John Ostringer's Suicide Squad and Paul Kupperberg's Checkmate comics from the 80s and early 90s. Also, over on G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast, my podcasting friends Ryan Daly and Kyle Benning, along with myself, are looking at all of the G.I. Joe, a Real American Hero comics, and related titles from Marvel and IDW. All of my headcasts are available on iTunes and Stitcher, along with the respective blogs and my main page at headspeaks.com. All comments, thoughts, and opinions expressed on Head Speaks are owned wholly by the speaker of said comments and do not express the opinions of Head Speaks, unless, of course, I'm the one making the comments. Head Speaks, Task Force X, and G.I. Joe, Real American Headcast, are all part of the Headcast family. So, join us next month for another wonderful episode of Head Speaks. Until then, I'll see you in the funny pages. Good night.